So if you're listening to this podcast, which I hope you are, obviously you wouldn't hear my words, you would know that we talk with people who are running or have run for office at every stage up and down the ballot, whether it's running for Congress or running for borough council, which I did. And a lot of people who run for office have run for more than one race, seeing the opportunity and seeing what can happen there. My guest today is Michelle Austerlitz, who is from New York, but also has some Philadelphia connections, which is great. And we're really excited to have her on to talk about her past elections, what she's running for now, and why you should run for office. If you haven't if you're starting out to listen to the podcast, please check out our previous episodes for candidates from New York State, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Missouri, and a bunch of other places. And subscribe, share this so more people can hear it, and hopefully you'll be encouraged to run for office too. So with that, Michelle Austerlitz, you are an impressive person because you've taken up the mantle to run for office not once, but twice, and seems like nothing's going to stop you out. So Michelle, welcome to the You Should Run podcast.
Oh, thank you, Tony. It's great to be here. Thanks for asking.
And we are united because we have a mutual connection, Matt Wall. And
yes, shout out to Matt.
And that's a good wall. We're probably not in favor of other kinds of walls, but Matt Wall we're in favor of.
Absolutely. We're pro that wall.
Good. So we're not going to take that quote out of context at all. So Michelle, you've run for office and you are in New York. So tell me a little bit about where you are and who you are.
Sure. So I was a lawyer down in the Philadelphia area. I moved north to be close to my parents who had retired up to Saratoga. So I moved to Schenectady County, which is northwest of Albany. It's about a half hour from them. So that's a perfect location for our lifestyle. We live in a suburban town. And I've done a lot of things within the town and our community on the volunteer level. So I've been on boards of a lot of organizations within our town and the capital region.
I know Albany a little bit because I went to college in Poughkeepsie. So I've been to Albany. It is a glamorous city filled with glitz.
That's exactly what they say about it. Yes.
It's basically a mini Hollywood, right?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit colder, but yeah, it's a lot of fun, actually. It's up and coming. I'm going to give a lot of credit to some of the areas that have done a lot of work, because we're upstate New York, and they're depressed, and we're actually on a recent episode of Simpsons, where they made fun of the depressed economies up here, which was so sad, but we're up and coming. We're trying really hard to attract different industries, like the tech industry, the arts, and we've loved it. We've absolutely loved it. We've lived here for about 15 years. Great school system, a lot of beautiful nature, very close to the Adirondacks, so I'm not complaining.
Well, that area of New York, I mean, I went to college in Poughkeepsie partly because it was just a beautiful area. That's on the Hudson, but that whole region outside of around Albany and New York State, probably one of the most beautiful parts of the entire country, correct?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we really enjoy it.
And so you, but you were in Philadelphia, you were moved up there, you were in law. What kind of law did you practice? What got you into doing legal work?
Honestly, my mother, she was the kind of person who didn't mince words, and she told me from an early age to be a lawyer, and that was pretty much the career advice that I got from her. So I did. And it's a great career. I worked in small and larger law firms. But when I moved north, I stopped practicing because we'd had a baby. And so I stayed home with her. And that's, I've used a lot of my legal training within the community. So on the boards, I was always sort of nominated to be on the bylaws committee and with big events, making sure the logistics work out. I've used it ever since. It's a very versatile degree. I encourage everybody to law school, but not necessarily to be a lawyer. You can do many other things.
Well, I think that's an important thing to say anyway is on this podcast. You should run for office and maybe you should go to law school. That's also a daunting thing to try to do because there's the cost, there's the time, there's the energy, there's the everything investment in doing that.
It's true. It's a huge investment. I saw it as a career path. I did practice. You asked me what did I practice. I worked in employment law and for hospitals and healthcare systems mostly. It was a lot of contract work, some real estate early on, and a broad base that gave me, I guess, a decent base of knowledge to enter politics someday, although I didn't really predict that happening.
Well, you didn't predict that happening. And one of the things I've talked to with other people who've run for office is, you know, what got them interested in politics in general? Some people over the last 2 years got engaged in politics because of the presidential election. And that happens with whoever has become president. Some people have always been political in nature. Some people, it was some event that happened to them where they hit a roadblock and they're like, this is what I can fix. So was it your family that was always political? Was it going through what made you interested in politics in general?
I knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. And when I was looking to undergrad programs, I applied for a program at Cornell. It was policy analysis, and I really enjoyed it. I didn't think necessarily that I'd go into government work or policy work, but it taught me a lot of economic models that are important when you are trying to analyze the benefits and costs of how any policy affects health or the economy or any sort of metric that you want to study. So ended up being a great education for where I am now. Although I didn't expect that either. Anyway, so I'd have to say my parents were not political, but my mom had grown up in Albany, and she told lots of stories of the Albany machine and the Democratic machine. And she was very adamant that you should always vote. You should vote your conscience, regardless of party leadership or party encouragement. And she did tell stories about abuses of power that she experienced. And so she ended up working for Governor Rockefeller and became a lifelong Republican, but a Rockefeller Republican. And that was pretty much how she raised us. So I have one sister, and the two of us were raised as Republicans in Southern Connecticut. And that seems a far distance from where I am now, but I was fine being a Republican until the 2016 election. It was, to me, it was a way to moderate the party with my vote, but also because, I should say, I didn't buy into the conservative agenda, the socially conservative agenda, but after the 2016 presidential election, it really became untenable. So I switched, and I registered Democrat.
Well, I doubt you were the only person that did that, and especially not the only person that did that in New York State. There were probably... I know in Pennsylvania, when I was knocking on doors in a 2016 election, there were people who had been Republican committee members who were like, nope, I'm done with this. This is not what I grew up with. Because I imagine listening to you that that area of what was a Republican may be very similar to the Philadelphia County Republicans, who were kind of like a lot of Democrats today, rather moderate people in this area.
I didn't get involved in the party back then, but I'll believe that. I was interviewed by a local newspaper, one of our colleges up here, Union College, and they told my backstory within the story of how I switched registrations, and I got a lot of calls after that article because I was not alone. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, so you decided in 2018, correct, to run for state senate. What led you to the decision to run for state senate, and why state senate over anything else?
So I think I'd like to back up a whole lot because the 2016 presidential election was the watershed moment, and a lot happened between the decision to run and the presidential result. So it was immediately after that election, I think we all, a lot of us felt that similar level of depression and anxiety. And then when the Women's March became, I guess, the rumor was going around that it was happening, a friend of mine and I rented a bus, and we decided to go down to the New York City March. And it was really the march that was the catalyst for what I ultimately did. Because, and I've described this to other people, and they felt the same way. There was a moment when I was in front of Grand Central Station, and it was a place that I've been to so many times before, but it was just absolutely full with people. There were people on the balcony I never even noticed before, just wall-to-wall people. And it was when I looked out over that sea of people that I could really feel the power of so many being brought together. And that was that excitement, that emotion, and the possibilities of that, that when I came back home, spurred us into action. And that was really why we formed a grassroots organization, what motivated us to pursue policy change and become involved in the political system at all. What we did is we started a grassroots organization. A lot of folks did that immediately after the march. And we did things like had postcard challenges and phone call challenges, and we contacted our local and national representatives for policy changes that we wanted to happen. We went door-to-door in our sister congressional districts that were Republican and canvassed there, and we trained other activists to do things like that. We went to town halls to ask our representatives questions. And what became pretty clear is that we weren't going to see a significant change until we changed the decision makers. And there is our state senator here who is a Republican, and he's a conservative Republican. He votes very conservatively, and nobody knew. People just had admired him as a person, but didn't realize that when he got to Albany, he was voting so conservatively. So we looked around for somebody to challenge him. And we spent a couple months going through our county, really. We talked to leaders in churches, temples, and mosques, and neighborhood associations, and all sorts of different organizations. We were looking for somebody who was a woman or a person of color who was a leader already in their communities, but weren't yet political, because he, our state senator, had been in public office for 40 years. So we had a wealth of voting record to talk about, and we really wanted somebody who's new and fresh, who had different ideals and different values. So we met with a lot of people. We got a lot of no's straight out, and then other people were willing to have coffee with us. We were a group of about 12, a little bit more, that we flat out said, we want you to run and we want to support you. And we have done a lot of research, and we went to campaign schools to help support a candidate, and we were ready to take on roles and put our life aside to support a candidate. But there's a lot of barriers and a lot of challenges that we found people face. And it's pretty daunting to take on a significant challenge like this. This is a big challenge. This guy had been in office for 40 years, very well known. There had never been a Democrat in the Senate seat from this district. So although we believed we could do it, we knew it was an uphill battle. And when we couldn't find anybody to say yes, I ended up stepping up and just running myself.
Was that how did you come to that decision? Was it scary? Was it just, I have to? But how did you personally get to that decision?
It was a lot of deciding whether I was, you know, there's insecurities. There's definitely insecurities I think that every woman candidate faces more than men. It's why women won't apply for a job unless they have 100% of qualifications, versus a man will apply if he's got 60% of the qualifications. And it's it can be overwhelming with other life, I guess, obligations. You know, we're typically caretakers, and I was helping my parents who were aging and taking care of two daughters who were 10 and 13 at the time. So it was a lot of just deciding whether the capacity of our life could handle it, whether we could give up our privacy, because running for office, you become very public and you put your family into the public. But it's kind of, I liken it to when I've seen women in crisis situations. You know, I've never seen a woman not handle a crisis. If they have a friend who's gotten a bad diagnosis, they research everything on the internet, call their friends, call the doctors they know. And if a woman's faced with a financial crisis or something like that, they assemble their team, they make a plan, they take control of it. And this was, I really see our country in a crisis. And And along with the women in our group, we went on crisis mode, and we just decided we had to do it. And personally, I really felt strongly that we had to do it, and I was willing to put everything else aside and take that risk.
Yeah, I feel from talking with a number of people over the past few weeks on this podcast that there's a lot of people who feel an obligation that whether it's to run for office or help others to do it, like, this is a time we can't sit back. You can't expect someone else to change the world.
That's exactly it. And I have two daughters at home, and I want them to know that it's important to step up. If nobody else is going to do it, you need to jump in and take care of business.
And so throughout that campaign, you mentioned your daughters. How did they receive it? Like, not necessarily the decision, but do you think that they got a good experience out of seeing you do it? And do you think they became more socially or politically minded because of what you were doing?
There is no doubt, because before I ran and we were just running a grassroots organization, we were constantly meeting here, literally at our kitchen table. And so they overheard discussions about issues, about people. And even when my husband was on parent duty and watching them, he would always come over and give us sort of like a pep talk and a thank you for doing this. Other people just complain, but you're actually doing something. And they heard that encouragement too. So they got good experience even before I decided to run for Senate. It was afterwards, I think, they got even a deeper understanding of the process, because for the most part, we shared a lot of information with them. We didn't want to be alarming, but we were always honest. We always answered their questions. And my daughter, who was 13, asked a lot of questions. And so we did explain. We took the time to explain stuff to them. And I have no doubt that they have a deeper understanding of the political process, the practicalities of what needs to get done in a campaign, but also the excitement and how positive it can be.
Good. So what you didn't win. Spoiler alert for people watching.
I know.
Listening. You know, we won't spoil Avengers Endgame on here, even though it's been out for a few weeks, but we will spoil the 2018 election. But one, I don't know what your expectations were, if you thought, like, yeah, we're going to do it, but what was the positives you got out of running? Because you knew it was an uphill battle, but you knew you had to do it. So what were some of the things that really left you feeling energized, hopefully, at the end of that process?
There were many wins along the way. So good. Even though we didn't win the seat at the end of the day, I have to say there were so many memories that I can point to and say they were really significant moments. And we thought, man, this could really happen because things seemed to come together really well. So when all of a sudden I'm trying to think of some of the key points. There was our local newspaper switched their endorsement at the last minute to endorse our campaign, which was wonderful. There was other moments where we had a lot of volunteers. We had about 400 volunteers, and a lot of the local college kids came and helped out with the campaign, and they were really encouraging, really enthusiastic. There were so many people that came out that really looked at the campaign as a way to deal with the news cycle when everything else was sort of falling apart and issues they couldn't help and they couldn't affect. They could come to our campaign office and enter data or make phone calls and feel like they contributed to something that was significant. And that, to me, bringing that many people together for something positive was a win. Even after the election, I kept hearing from people. There was one young woman who wrote her college essay about it. There was another mom who told me the story that her daughter was in the middle of trying to decide between going to a women's college, applying early decision to a women's college, or going to a large university engineering program. And she said that her daughter was particularly worried about losing her voice and her spirit. Being surrounded by a male-dominated culture. And she and her mom came to my debate, and she said that seeing a woman speak on substantive issues without reservation, without apology. She was greatly affected, and she did decide. She said, you know what, if she can do it, I'll have no trouble finding my voice. And she did decide to go ahead with the engineering program. That, to me, is a win.
Yeah, it's a huge win.
Yeah. Another, I guess, bigger win was we ended up winning our home county, Schenectady County. So that's where me and my opponent both live. And Schenectady County had never voted for a Democratic candidate for this seat ever before. So that was huge to know that this is where most people know both of us. And I took Schenectady County, and it was really gratifying. So there were a lot of wins along the way. And overall, it was just a phenomenal experience.
That's great. And, you know, I talk about people getting your first votes, but having someone come out to volunteer for you is such a just a boost, especially the first time you're running for office. Is wow, you're doing this for me. You could do anything else with your day, but you're doing this for me so I can get something out of it. Like, you have to keep going when someone's willing to volunteer because they're inspired by you in some way.
Oh, there is no doubt. It absolutely was energizing every day. Great.
Well, good. So what we also talk about, what are some of the challenges? So because we're trying to demystify why people should run for office, but can you just say quickly one or two challenges that really either you knew going in or you didn't know and they came up?
I knew going in that fundraising was going to be a challenge. It is always going to be harder for women to fundraise than men, but I had been coached very well by folks who had been through the process. I had a wonderful friend who stuck with me through the fundraising process and literally sat by my side as I made the phone calls. And we carved out hours every day to make the phone calls. And we had over 700 individual donors and raised $250,000 for a Senate race where I certainly wasn't expected to raise that much. So that was wonderful, but it was tedious, disheartening at times. Even though there were some wonderful calls, there were some memorably not great calls, and that was hard. There were, you know, there's always ups and downs to a campaign, and so when there's ups, the downs can get pretty low. But other challenges, I mean, balancing life. Balancing life is hard, and making sure that the kids had support that they needed. That my parents, when they were ill during the campaign, had support that they needed. It was all pretty hard to juggle. But yet again, I would do it again in a second.
Well, great. Well, you are doing it again. You are running for another office. So tell us what you're running for. And then normally I would say, what issues do you care about? But that's what you're going to do here. What are the things that are really motivating you to run for this new office today?
So when I won the Schenectady County, the local leadership asked me to run for Schenectady County legislature. And one of the biggest issues I ran on in the state for the state senate race was healthcare, because going door to door, that was clearly the number one issue people were struggling with, just healthcare costs out of control. And truly, truly struggling with high deductible plans that they could not afford and going into bankruptcy. It was heartbreaking. And the number one issue people talk to me every single day about. So for on the county level, there's quite a bit that touches on public health. A lot of the programs that are mandated by the state and some funded by the state run through the county government. So it's making sure that public health is done well and done equitably. But it's also... there were a couple of households that I went to that talked to me about loved ones who had addiction, and those just cut right through my heart. And so I'd also like to focus on addiction services. And Schenectady County is doing a lot in the last few years. Their public health department is great, and their programs for seniors in particular are great, but I'm hoping to just lend a hand and see what else I can bring to the table.
you know, and I've recorded a few podcasts here. One of them was with Jess King, who ran for Congress in Pennsylvania. And she said that while she cared about healthcare, she didn't realize, no one can realize the depth of the healthcare issues until you are talking to so many people and hearing those stories. And it was an important issue to her before she ran, but then it became like the top issue because of just seeing how it's so personal and what people are going through. Did you experience that from talking to people? Like, you knew healthcare was an issue, but just wow.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one story that was incredibly touching. I met a young couple who were hoping to move back to the area, so they were visiting with their parents who lived in the area. And the wife's father had felt a lump, and he felt sick, but he didn't have healthcare. And so he didn't want to bother anybody, and he's the provider, so he didn't tell anybody. And he kept getting sicker and sicker. And at one point, the Affordable Care Act was passed, and so he quickly got on it. But it was only just in time for him to be able to get on hospice. And she lost her father because they couldn't find affordable health care, or he didn't tell them in time because he didn't have health insurance. And the options that are out there that I've seen, including high-deductible plans in particular, are products that are not supporting families. They're bankrupting families. People who select plans that have high-deductible plans do so because they don't have the monthly payment for higher premiums, but they also don't have the savings if they get in a car accident, if they trip and fall, or if they get a bad diagnosis. And I ran into so many people that had opted, of course, for the high-deductible plan because it was less expensive and it was what they could afford, but it didn't offer them really the coverage that they ended up needing when they hit a healthcare crisis. And those are the ones that stay with you always and forever, that's for sure. And it still drives me to think that we don't have more advocacy and a greater drive to get universal healthcare in our country.
Yeah, and I hate when I hear people who kind of make it so that the person who made that choice was just making a bad decision for what to get, or, you know, they were irresponsible. Oftentimes, it's the people with the least money who are the most responsible, but they just have the least amount of money. Like, it's, what do you expect me to do type of thing.
Absolutely. It's hard to realize this in retrospect. I mean, everybody has 20/20 hindsight. That product should never be on the market. Insurance companies have actuaries that are on staff to assess risks. Our families are not charged with being able to assess risks. And they're being asked to make decisions when they're making, in the moment, very rational decisions. It's the fact that the system's broken. Products like high-deductible plans should never exist.
And so running as a county executive, kind of for a county position, you may not be able to pass universal health care, but if you can, great, let me know how that works. But you can administer the programs in a way that is more open and helpful towards those populations that you met throughout your community.
I can ask the questions. I can definitely ask the questions of insurance companies that are in the area and see what gaps are in public health programs to make sure that more people have affordable options.
And you know better what to ask. You know how to do it. That's something that's a perspective that might be missing because good or bad, someone just didn't have that outlook that you had from what you've done.
Sure. And the drive. You got it.
Right. So that's some of the things you're working on that you want to do and how you've evolved from that election through everything else. But one thing, it's called the You Should Run podcast. So if you are a person interested in politics or a young woman or not so young woman too, because we need more women in politics, why would you tell people to run for office in 2019, 2020, or whenever?
It all goes back to that adage of the personal is political, and people are making decisions that will affect our every aspect of our life. And when I think of the perspectives that are lost by not having a diverse representation at the state level, it pains me because better decision making happens, better policy is made when you have diverse perspectives at the table. And right now, our state legislature has 30% women and even less people of color. We need to make sure that our representatives reflect our population. And if it means stepping up, so be it. It's go back into that crisis management, you know, do what you need to do, assemble the team, make a plan, because not only is it necessary to mend what's been broken in our country and even locally, but it's personally one of the best things I've ever done. Absolutely. It is so enriching, you know, just being around people, challenging every day, and then meeting people you never would have met that tell you the stories of their lives that will always affect how you see things. The entire experience is incredible.
Well, I remember my high school biology teacher telling me us that human beings are storytelling animals. That's the thing that sets us apart. And those stories, like you said, motivate us every day. If people want to follow you online and learn more about you, where can they go? Whether it's Twitter or whatever.
So the best place is right now is Facebook. So it's Michelle for Schenectady County.
Great.
On Facebook. That would be great. Thank you.
Look for that. If you're on here, look her up online. We'll put the link in here so people can see where that is when it goes up on our Facebook page as well. Michelle, you're right. We need more perspectives in politics because I don't know, you probably noticed Nevada, I don't know how to pronounce it right, it's the first legislature with a majority female representation, but that means that 49 other states do not.
Yep, it's amazing, and I love Ruth Bader Ginsburg saying that it'll be fair when we've got the 200 years of female-dominated Supreme Court, and that's the truth. We need to make sure that everybody gets a chance.
Well, as a straight white man from Philadelphia or from Pittsburgh, I agree. I think we need to do that as well. So I appreciate you being on here, and thank you for running for office, and thank you for encouraging others to participate as well. And we hope everyone here will take your lead and maybe run for office too.
Great. Thanks, Tony. And you should run.